It's one of those things only U.S. presidents can do, like pardoning people convicted of crimes, and that is creating national monuments. But national parks, not national parks, that's a big distinction, but national monuments. The Federal Antiquities Act gives presidents the power to designate and add to national monuments. And after President Clinton created the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument by the Oregon-California state line, President Obama enlarged it. President Trump then came into office and quickly moved on plans to shrink the Cascade Siskiyou and several other monuments. And there was recent activity on that front. Documents went public, which the Interior Department clearly did not want public because they showed the department may have given short shrift to arguments in favor of expansion. There was also court activity specific to the Cascade Siskiyou in which President Trump's team of lawyers sided with President Obama's powers in a rare move. That's a little hard to follow, certainly. We have a couple of guests to help untangle what's going on here with us. Dave Willis is with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council and a longtime supporter of the concept and execution of a Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. He's in the studio with me. Dave, good to have you back.
Thanks, Jeffrey. We hope it won't be executed.
I was wondering if you'd pick up on that word. We also have with us by phone Susan Jane Brown, an attorney with the Western Environmental Law Center. Hi, Susan Jane.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Dave, start off, if you would, with the people who might have missed some of the details along the way. How old is the monument, how big the expansion, and what is the Trump administration plan?
Well, the monument land has been there for gazillions of years. But
we're talking the map squares here.
It started to be progressively degraded in the mid-1850s when the Europeans took a different approach to the land than the Native Americans had. And finally, in the year 2000, after a lot of small administrative designations, research natural areas, areas of critical environmental concern, Pacific Crest Trail Corridor, Soda Mountain Wilderness Study Area recommendation, late successional reserve.
Under the Northwest Forest Plan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then the Cascade Siskiyou Ecological Emphasis Area designation that basically was pursuant to the forest plan. Finally, all those were gathered together in one basket called the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument by President Clinton in June 2000. The boundaries were interesting in that you had the only national monument established to protect biodiversity that had the southern boundary as a state line. Obviously, the biodiversity came to a screeching halt at the state line.
And the northern
part of the monument was late successional reserve in the Northwest Forest Plan. And if you look at an aerial map of the northern area of the monument and outside, you see that inside the monument, most of that late successional reserve or old growth land had been hit pretty hard by management, eroded and logged, because late successional reserve wasn't necessarily old growth that was going to be managed for old growth. Outside those boundaries, you saw, in general, a much better canopy. That's where the real forest was.
Outside the late successional reserve?
That's where the real forest was.
Yeah. All right, so the designation by President Clinton in June of 2000, you say, and then President Obama's expansion late in his term added, was it 50% more to it?
The original monument of 53,000 acres had grown to about 66,000 acres through acquisitions from willing sellers by BLM. And then President Obama added 47,000 acres and some, a little less than 48,000 acres. So roughly 114,000 acres in the monument now.
Now, was the Trump administration plan then to just pull off the additional 47,000 that Obama had added, or was it to go further than that?
We can't say what the Trump administration plan was. Secretary Zinke, when his recommendations finally went public on December 5, he proposed reducing boundaries and producing protections. I think it's important to make sure people understand that the monument expansion was much smaller than scientists recommended. They recommended larger boundaries, and the Antiquities Act lets presidents protect public land with objects of historic or scientific interest, and the meta objects in the case of Cascade Siskiyou are the biological connectivity and the remarkable biodiversity. When Senators Merkley and Wyden threw their support for the monument expansion, their proposal in early October 2016 reduced the scientists' proposal. And then when President Obama actually expanded the monument, his expansion was smaller yet than Senators Merkley and Wyden had proposed. So the monument, in a sense, has already been reduced from what the scientists said was important, especially in the case of climate change for resilient habitats.
All right. So you're saying it needs to be a whole lot bigger than it even was gotten to officially on paper, and then we're talking about reducing it in size further.
I'm saying that's what the scientists said.
Mm-hmm. Susan Jane Brown at the Western Environmental Law Center, to the law part of this, has a monument ever been shrunken by a president before?
Well, I think that that's certainly the question here, and there have not been cases in modern times when a president has abolished or shrunk a monument. There have been rare instances in the past, for example, when back in the early years of the use of the Antiquities Act, presidents had designated areas as military installations, for example. And when the military need passed, then the monument was no longer necessary. But in modern times, that has never occurred, and it certainly hasn't occurred in such a politicized environment as the one that we find ourselves in now.
Politicized in the sense of a president trying to erase the accomplishments of a previous president?
That's right. And we have, as Dave pointed out, Secretary Zinke did produce a report that was not publicly available until much later that was discovered by news outlets. And that monument review report was definitely not based on available facts or information. It was one-sided towards increasing what the secretary called traditional uses on existing monuments. And what that translates into is more logging and mining for those sorts of extractive industries, even though the facts suggest that things like tourism, in fact, produce quite a bit more revenue for communities where national monuments are located.
All right, so let's we're talking to Susan Jane Brown of the Western Environmental Law Center and Dave Willis at the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council about the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument and other national monuments and efforts to shrink those in size under the Trump administration. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Susan Jane, these documents were requested by whom?
Well, there have been a number of interests that are looking for information about the monuments process, and not just Cascade Siskiyou, but all of the monuments that were on Zinke's list. And those range from conservation organizations to wildlife organizations to members of the press. So there have been a number of entities that have been looking for information, trying to get to the bottom of what the administration is actually doing on national monuments. So those documents have been released over time through the Freedom of Information Act. There have been a number of those requests, probably hundreds of requests, and I think probably what you're getting at is that the Department of Interior has been relatively slow in responding to those FOIA requests because there are so many, and has taken the approach that they will release those documents in response to Freedom of Information Act requests on a rolling basis. And so they've been doing that every couple of weeks. And since I also have a FOIA request with the Department of Interior on this issue, I received those emails as well, as did a number of people. And the department inadvertently released a number of documents over the past couple of weeks that it appears that they did not intend to actually release. And those documents indicate that the case for shrinking or abolishing monuments based on harm to economic interests, those traditional economic interests, so mining, logging, commercial fishing, that in fact those economic impacts were nowhere near as great as what the administration was saying in public. And so the release documents do tend to disclose that national monuments are beneficial for local communities where they are found and can be expected to continue to provide those sorts of economic benefits into the future.
I want to jump in here.
Sure, go ahead, Dave.
Some of what Department of Interior released was heavily, heavily redacted.
Wow,
I'll hold this one document up to the microphone where everybody can see it, and you can see there's just a lot of black in this particular document.
I'll take a picture of that for Facebook if you hold it up again. But so the point is that many redactions going on. Is that serious, these black pages here?
That the black pages are the redactions. But what's interesting is they didn't redact everything. In this report, Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, Economic Values and Economic Contributions, Table 2, page 9, Cascade Siskiyou Monument, Estimated Economic Contributions, 2016, Recreation Economic Output, $16.6 million, Employment Supported, $200 jobs,
mm-hmm.
But Grazing, $1.1 million, Timber, $0.6 million. That was Recreation 16.6. They left that in. Zinke's report seems to totally ignore the science, which is the basis for the monument. The Antiquities Act allows presidents with congressional authority to protect public land with objects of historic or scientific interest. The purpose of the monument is not recreation. The purpose of the monument is to protect the biodiversity and the biological connectivity, but by doing that, they produce recreation jobs that are, 15 times more than grazing jobs and maybe 20, 30 times more than timber jobs.
But I can hear, though, in my head already the response from the timber tree industry, which is that the reason the timber comes up as zero is because you're not letting people cut trees in there.
I would have to find out where this came from. But it's a BLM report, and there's the numbers. And it shows that, indeed, green is gold. When you protect public land, you're far better off in the long term than when you degrade public land.
Dave Willis is with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council. Susan Jane Brown is an attorney at the Western Environmental Law Center. We're talking about national monuments with a specific focus on the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument southeast of Ashland and now expanded across the state line, and the issue of whether it will contract again by order of the Trump administration. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So to the other part of this that we mentioned at the outset, Susan Jane, recent activity in court on a lawsuit filed against the expansion of the Cascade Siskiyou by resource groups.
Yes, that's right. There's actually three lawsuits that were filed shortly after President Obama left office and after he expanded this Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. The American Forest Resources Council and the Association of Oregon California Counties each filed a lawsuit in the D.C. District Court, and then Murphy Company, which is an industrial private landowner, timber landowner, near the monument, also filed a third lawsuit in the Oregon District Court. All three lawsuits are nearly identical in terms of the claims that they are raising. And in fact, there's actually only one claim that has been raised in all three lawsuits, which is not a question about whether or not the president has the authority to expand a national monument. That law is extremely well settled and has been for many, many decades. And that case law holds that the president can, in fact, designate a national monument to protect scientific and cultural objects, as Dave mentioned. But the three plaintiffs in these lawsuits, are essentially arguing that the Oregon and California Lands Act, which is, as we've discussed before in your program, is a unique statute that applies to the Oregon and California lands, the checkerboard lands there.
The old railroad grant lands for the Oregon and California Railroad.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So those checkerboard lands, the Oregon and California Lands Act applies to the management of those lands. And the plaintiff's argument here is that the ONC Act, which was enacted by Congress in 1937, essentially supersedes the Antiquities Act of 1906. And so their argument is that the Oregon and California Lands Act is a supreme statute over the Antiquities Act, and therefore the monument expansion was inappropriate on those ONC lands in Southwest Oregon.
But you had lawyers for the Trump administration essentially then say, no, no, it's right. President Obama does have the power to override the ONC Act. Is that the essence of what was said?
Well, the essence of their argument is that, and it makes sense in terms of their larger litigation strategy involving other national monuments where the president has acted to shrink monuments, is that the president's authority under the Antiquities Act is very, very broad, and therefore the president can really do, in their view, whatever he wants with national monuments. He can designate them, he can expand them, and he can shrink them. And that is the Department of Justice's litigation position in the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase and Marine Monuments cases, all of which are cases brought by interests that want to see those monuments protected and not shrunk by the president. So the Department of Justice is pretty consistent in terms of its view of the Antiquities Act. As far as the DOJ's position for the ONC Act goes, their argument is similar to ours, which is that the ONC Act is a multiple-use statute, and that means that certainly you can harvest timber on some lands, but you can also protect lands as national monuments, and you can conserve those lands through things like late successional reserves or critical habitat for listed species. So their argument is directly in contrast to the industry plaintiff's argument, and DOJ has said this statute does not mean that we cannot have a monument on these lands, and that was good to see because we weren't sure how DOJ would proceed because we are aware that the president is hostile to national monuments, and so we weren't sure what their position was going to be, but they have come out to essentially say that the monument expansion was appropriate.
Dave Willis?
You asked if presidents had reduced monuments before. It's happened in isolated cases, one at a time. It's never been considered in such a wholesale fashion as this administration. And when President Trump reduced the Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument, and Bears Ears National Monument by a combined 2 million acres. That's the largest reduction of protected public land in U.S. history, the largest by far. And that is being challenged by numerous groups, Native Americans, local activists, national conservation groups. And it's doubtful that will stand up, because the Antiquities Act gives presidents the authority to protect public land. Congress did not give presidents the authority to unprotect public land when Congress passed the Antiquities Act.
Susan Jane, is there any injunctive relief in the case against the shrinking of Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante? In other words, is the land pretty much frozen until some court decision emerges, or is resource use then going on now?
Well, that's certainly the concern that there will be some sort of development that goes on in the areas that have been shrunken, and there is a planning process that is ongoing. I'm not familiar with where that is in the process. I believe that BLM is moving forward with revising and developing monument plans for those lands based on their shrunken footprint. And so there is concern about that. My understanding is that the parties that Dave mentioned that are looking to defend those monuments have not moved for injunctive relief yet. But I would expect that could be a possibility depending on what sort of activity is proposed and when in those areas.
So when we get to a situation where there are conflicting laws, and I know that having talked to a few people in the mining business, they think that the 1872 mining law reigns supreme over anything that has come since, but is it a first-come, first-served kind of situation, Susan Jane, or is there even a reliable doctrine about what to do when laws on the books seem to conflict with each other?
Well, there certainly is. There are a number of tools that lawyers and judges and courts use to determine, you know, if you have two laws that appear to conflict, do they in fact conflict? And if so, which one yields? And there are a number of esoteric legal frameworks in which to undertake that analysis. But I think the immediate question is, you know, what happens on a day-to-day basis on lands that have been removed from monument protection. And frankly, again, in modern times, this is somewhat new ground. We have not had a president that has done a whole-scale shrinkage of national monuments for political reasons in the past, so we are a little bit in uncharted territory. But the fact remains that if there are, drilling activities, for example, that were proposed, there is a process for that. There is an administrative process that the drilling proponent would have to go through, and there would be a public process and an environmental review that would need to take place before that activity actually got underway. So it is not the case that the doors are thrown wide open and any kind of development can now occur. Those development activities would still need to go through the regular authorization process. But the fact is that that results in a lot of wasted time and energy when, in fact, as Dave points out, really these lands, their highest and best use in many cases is some sort of conservation, whether that's as a national monument or other designation, because there are numerous environmental and economic benefits that flow from that protected status. And so it seems like it's a lot of wasted effort, frankly, to have to go through a process when these lands should, in fact, be protected as national monuments.
So just a few seconds left here, Dave Willis. I mean, what are you doing with the Cascade Siskiyou then? Can you do much until an actual amount for shrinkage is specified?
Well, that's a question for the BLM. They don't seem to be doing much. But people who have done a lot, I want to thank Governor Kate Brown, Senators Wyden, Senators Merkley, former Senator Alan Bates and Kevin Talbert, Representative Peter Buckley, Representative Pam Marsh, dozens of Oregon state reps, the Chamber of Commerce boards, and city councils and mayors of the two closest towns to the monuments, 200 scientists, and a lot of your listening audience have supported the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. And they know, if anything, based on the scientific criteria of the Antiquities Act, it should be enlarged and not shrunk.
All right, we will see what plays out in the weeks and months ahead. Dave Willis is with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council. Susan Jane Brown, an attorney at Western Environmental Law Center. Thank you both for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.